Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of App Chat, the show where I talk to developers that have got applications in the iTunes store, and we find out a bit about the history and the development of the apps. This week I'm joined by Harry Karam Singh of Club 15cc, whose app in the App Store is SoundOne. How are you doing, Harry Karam?
I'm very well, Carl. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very much looking forward to being here.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. Now, Harry, you got a rather unique application in SoundOne. You want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, thank you. SoundOne is a music app, but it's not just another one of these toy music apps or one of the ones that tries to simulate what you can already do better on a full-scale computer. The aim was to do something, and it's the beginning of something, which is an entirely new way of creating music. And it's part of a project that has really two goals in mind. And the first is to combine that dynamic excitement you get with acoustic, or not necessarily acoustic, but live instruments like guitars and drums, you know, the sort of variation and the energy that they convey, with all the unlimited options that are open with electronic music. There's so many things you can control, bringing those two worlds together using the sophisticated motion sensors on the iPhone. And the other is to make instruments that are easy for anyone, even without musical training, to experience that secret satisfaction that musicians... I've played guitar since I was a teenager, as I think you might hear a bit later. And that ability to rock out, to jam, to improvise is one of those like secret pleasures in life, right up there with the other one everyone knows about, you know, sex. And but like most people aren't aware of it. They think musicians, they just read something and they play it, and that's one class. But bringing that experience to everybody is one of the things that I'd like to do. And so SoundOne is the beginning. It's a pluck-based instrument. You move the phone around, and it's like you're plucking invisible harp strings that are in the air around you by moving the phone, kind of like a conductor. And it's the first of its kind that I've seen on the App Store, and one of the first to use the motion sensors that were new in iPhone 4 and iPad 2 in such a sophisticated and kind of high-performance way. And you can gig with it. I've played with this thing. I've gone busking to try to drum up some interest around London, down in Greenwich, and over near London Bridge. And you can, you know, especially if you put it in airplane mode, you can rock out with this thing for like 2 hours without a hiccup. So that to me is what makes it a little bit more than just, okay, some of the toys that are out there.
Oh, good. So have you got the app running on your phone at the moment?
Oh yeah, I can. Yeah, I've got it right here. Should I try to do?
Do you want to give us a few riffs?
Yeah, I should have brought my little amps up. I just put clarify my speaker has suffered a little bit through the development process, so it's kind of half volume. But I'll see if I can do it near the microphone.
Okay.
And let's see. So that's it's got different scales in it. That's Hebrew. It has that kind of, I guess, Middle Eastern influence. There's blues. There's Spanish flamenco, and you can do harmonies by touching different zones. And if you find one of the strings, the kind of invisible strings in the air, you can tremolo it and get that sort of effect. And it's based on the sounds of a harp, but it's actually very similar to a certain type of dulcimer. In India, there's an instrument called a santoor, and I think there's Western equivalents where it's kind of like a stringed instrument that sits on your lap, and you play it with little hammers. And when you hear those guys go crazy on it, it's that same kind of sweeping motion. So it's not the kind of thing you'll ever like replicate your favorite Coldplay song on, because it's quite hard to find the notes exactly every time. You can do it. It just takes a bit of practice. But you can rock out over, if you know the key and the scale, you can rock out over your favorite Coldplay track and sound like the bee's knees. So, so that's its kind of thing.
So what you're doing is you're holding your thumb onto the phone in the various sectors, like you say, and then shaking the phone backwards. And as you move it through the airspace, it's plucking different strings.
Exactly. So yeah, you hold it in one hand, you place your phone on the screen, you don't slide your thumb around, or you place your thumb on the screen, you don't slide it around, which is what a lot of people do because they're used to that way of interacting, but you move the phone instead, kind of like in an arc around you. Imagine there's like a circle surrounding you, like a hula hoop almost, and you move in that space, and that's where the strings are. So it reads the angle of the phone, in kind of developer speak, it's called the yaw in Core Motion. and you find those strings and you just pluck them. So if you just sweep, you get that kind of sound. But it's very quick. It's like really low latency, which is kind of a music term, which means when you make the motion, the time between the motion and the sound coming out is really, really low. And that's critical in like professional music apps. So you don't feel this delay, which makes it hard to play. So it's very, that's the kind of performance angle.
Yeah, it's very good. I used it on AirPlay earlier. So it was playing through my amp.
Oh, cool.
And I was just sitting there trying to, you know, free-forming some music tracks.
Yeah.
And it was good fun.
Excellent.
What we got is we've got a short little video that you put on YouTube. If anyone wants to search YouTube for Sound Wand, you'll find these videos. There's two of them. I'm going to play the short one now, and then I'm going to put the full one on at the end of the show so you can all have a listen. And it's Harry strumming with a guitar, or playing with a guitar, and also using the sound wand at the same time. It's sort of a battle between the two instruments.
Yeah, it's kind of a Hendrix-inspired piece, the track Blue House, Red House, for those who know it, that kind of thing, so you'll hear.
Okay, so here it comes. There we go. There it is in full effect. Fantastic stuff. So where did the idea come from?
Well, it's kind of, I've always been into to music and since I was an early teenager, and I've been programming since even before that. I had this little Timex Sinclair 2000 thing that plugs into your TV back when I was like 8, and it had BASIC on it. And from there, I've always been into programming. And shortly after, I had a proper computer and it could make music, and I play guitar, and so this is kind of the coming together of those worlds. And I was really, I don't know if I could admit this on the show, I was really like a PC person until I got my iPhone 4, and it's totally changed everything. And just even the programming language itself is so well done that it quite inspired me. And I've always been kind of with electronic music bothered by the fact that there's all this infinite possibility. Like if you look at especially modern synthesizers, there's so many things you can control and samplers, so many ways you can tweak the music. But actually the tools to control it, you've basically got a keyboard which is kind of on and off with a little bit of extra velocity and like a couple knobs and some faders. And none of them really capture that energy. Like if you push a fader really hard, it doesn't change the music any more than if you push it kind of soft.
Yep.
And I've always been, you know, slightly bothered by that. And there's been attempts to deal with this in the past with things that let like, you play your guitar since, but it's never really caught on. But when I saw the iPhone 4's motion sensors and how sophisticated they are, I mean, there's 3 axes of rotation, 3 of translation, there's acceleration and also position. So you've got like 9 things that you can link up. And they're linked to your, you know, your movement. So if you move really energetically, then the sensors pick that up. And I thought, that's the answer. Developing the tools to link that to the various parameters in your synths, you can suddenly create these really sophisticated, organic, in a sense, instruments, but still with that pristine quality of digital music. And so that was the beginning inspiration for it.
Fantastic. And how long did it take you to develop from like beginning to completion?
I started on it last July, and there was a brief 2-month break, I guess you'd say. I was building a website for my business partner, who's a photographer, nickfleming.com. Very cool. Check that out. But I took 2 months off for that. And so it was, I guess, about 9 months minus those 2. And a lot of that was learning curve, which I might touch on a bit later. It's a lot. I hadn't really done app programming for a very long time. I'd done a lot on the web. And plus just getting used to all the libraries and everything was a massive learning curve. So pretty full on, full time. That was the only thing I was working on for about those 9 months.
Sound Wand was your first idea when you decided to start programming for the iPhone?
Yeah, it was the real sort of idea, the first thing I did is I found a couple apps that let you just read the motion sensors and send them out in raw computer data. And they're quite, they're a bit clunky, these apps, but they did the job. And I linked it up through a program called Reactor, which is made by a company, Native Instruments, that a lot of people into music will know I'm all about. And it lets you kind of program by dragging boxes around, but with a heavily music focus. It's really good for prototyping and building some things that way. Just to see whether it was possible to really use these sensors. And I made like some drums where you can hit spaces around you and trigger things. And I did the pluck thing at first. And the original idea really was to create something that was more for the producers, where it doesn't actually have any sound in it, but just as a sophisticated controller that you can link to your synths and samplers and everything. And I thought, well, maybe the best way to turn this into a business would be to take and to develop all the kind of algorithms for the various types of motion sensor reading would be to do them one at a time and roll out like more consumer-friendly products that have the sound in them. And so the first one I thought to do was this. We have a harp in our little studio here. My business partner plays. And I thought, let's try that because it's pretty cool to be able to pluck strings out of the air. And so that was the first one in this kind of series that I dreamed up in my head.
And have you gone about marketing? Because like a lot of guests we have on, they say the hardest thing comes to the self-marketing.
Yeah, marketing. I've got a lot to say in marketing, and I will try to reduce it down to short, pithy thing here. I'll just say I released it in May 2012 on the App Store. It's been out. Well, I don't want to sort of date your podcast, but it's been out since then, and I guess I will date it. It's been out so about 2.5 months. I'll be totally open. I've had about 400 or 500 sales at its current price, which is £1.99, which is, you know, great to some extent that the people are interested in buying it, but it's obviously not enough to kind of support a developer salary, I guess would be maybe one of the benchmarks. Mm-hmm. And so this is something I'm really still learning, but I consider myself as kind of in the trenches at the moment. And, you know, maybe have some things that are helpful to offer to others who are in that situation. And the first is a really good piece of advice that I actually got from a book marketing conference that a friend of mine went to. And they said, and it's very similar, writing a book, building an app, all in that same genre. And these people who had written these best-selling books had said that writing the book is 10% of the work. And that is definitely my experience, that building the app is 10% of the work. And if you just finished building an app, you really don't want to hear that. It's you know, you're about to hit. When I released in the app store, App Store, I really just hit the floor and took like 2 days to let my brain recuperate. And but now I'm sort of coming to terms that I spent 9 months building it. I can definitely spend another at least 9 months learning to market it and working on that. So that's one thing to take on board. I mean, I hear a lot of developers, and I was listening to some of the other podcasts in App Chat, and it seems like they generate a really great idea, and they organize that really great idea into a fantastic product, and then they just fall down the third step, which is delivering it to the world, and that's really a big part of it as well. So make sure you brace yourself for a big learning curve in that department, and don't be, you know, it's a big part of the plan. And it's actually like the most rewarding to get people. You know, I've had not many reviews, but I've had fantastic reviews, and, you know, great reviews on the App Store really boost your confidence and your motivation for continuing with the project. So that's a big deal. The second point to me is marketing. It seems to me it's like flying a kite. Like, once you get that thing in the air, everything is cool. And the air is defined, I think, really by the top 25 or top 50 in either a category or in a country. Because once you get into there, your exposure works. I've had about a dozen reviews, and the biggest ones at the moment being in, I think, Cult of Mac and The Next Web. And that had quite a bit of publicity, and it gives you like a little spike on your sales. But a couple days later, back to zero. And San Juan being quite different is a bit of a challenge because nobody's really searching for it. I haven't quite cracked the best way of getting the search words in there because it's quite a unique thing. So the App Store gives me absolutely nothing. That's the other thing I think is important to convey. Don't expect the App Store to give you anything. Maybe if you've made like a new to-do app or you've done a mashup of Twitter with Pinterest and thrown a little Facebook, you'll probably get like search terms and you'll probably get some that way. But other than that, the App Store has the same infrastructure that it had when there was only 16,000 apps in the App Store. And now there's like, what, 800,000, probably a million now. I don't know. Yeah, it keeps absolutely going up. And it's the same little scrolly list of 25 when people browse, and that's how most people do. So you be aware of this. It's still possible, but it requires work to get that kite flying. And from I've emailed developers and all the top that have apps on the top of the charts, trying to just get little just bits of advice from them. And a lot of them say that it's all about the launch, getting the launch right. And if you're new to the game, that's really tough, because I knew it was about getting the launch right. I just sort of knew, and I just didn't have the energy to really get my marketing together beforehand and getting the press release written exactly. I just wanted that app out there by the time it was done. And so that's a big challenge. But if you have the stamina, or you have the business partner maybe who's an expert in marketing or something like that, and you can get your launch to kick off with having an article in Cult of Mac on the day of the launch, then you can get that thing boosted up into the new and noteworthy, and then you can get it into the top 25, and suddenly your kite is flying and you're doing okay. So that's a really key piece of advice. The other thing I hear a lot of is people saying, if I only had some money to spend, and that would solve all the problems. And the phrase comes to mind, a fool and his or her money are soon parted. And I sort of have like a little bit that I've just set aside to spend on marketing. I was ready to go. And then I stopped and I thought, you know what? Like, it just doesn't seem right. And everyone I speak to with an app in the top 50, which should have been a few people, say that they haven't spent any money on marketing, which I find absurd. And I'm not sure if they're just kind of saying that because they don't want to make it look like that they are. But I think there's something to that, a lesson, regardless of whether that's 100% true or not. There was a big infographic that came out recently, the conclusion of which was successful apps, if you build it, they will come. If you spend it, they will come. What a great piece of marketing. Yeah. But that infographic was made by a company that charges for app marketing.
So, oh, that's a surprise.
So I was reminded by one of the top app developers I threw that piece of information at, and they said not. So don't think that money will solve the problem, partly because the amount per sale is so low. So even like Facebook ads, right? You're going to pay. I ran some Facebook ads for a bit, and I was paying about 30p to get a like. Or maybe it was 30 cents, whatever it was. And then you post stuff on Facebook, which is another sort of hassle because you got to keep creating content to put out there. You can't just keep promoting yourself. Then you have to pay an additional $5 to get it seen by those people who you've already paid to have on your list. Mm. This is how Facebook's going. So you have to be very careful, because if you're not converting a pretty high percentage of them, then you're paying more to get them to buy your app than your app is actually worth. And if you've made something and you're selling for £200 a pop, that's obviously not such a big deal. But when your app is down in the single digits of pounds or dollars or even less, then that's something to really be aware of. And same with advertising. And just another thing that's related to that, there are so many app review sharks, review sites that are like Charlotte, kind of opportunists. I don't really know. I just know what it looks like to me. But a lot of them are saying that they've got masses of traffic and they're charging large amounts for expedited reviews. And they're all trying to be moral about it. Oh, our charge doesn't affect the review. So in other words, you can pay and you can still get a bad review, which is really reassuring, right? But does it really generate, if you spend £100 or $100 on getting a review on a website, does it really give you the traffic to generate that back? I don't think so. I mean, I haven't had a single review site of any. I've had a few small ones, but I've had none of the big ones, none of the sort of two dozen big ones review SoundOne. Yet I've had like some of the bigger blogs review it. So these guys are obviously doing very well. So more power to them. But don't think that it's necessarily the best way to go, and really do your research and make sure you're not just throwing your money away. And the research that I've done into them makes it really look like that it's not really going to pay for itself. Maybe it's one of the things you do on launch to get that extra bit of traffic, kind of like a loss leader, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean? Like you know you're not going to make that money explicitly on that one site, but because it's the boost that will get you into the top 10 rather than top 25, then you'll make your money that way. So to be very careful with spending your money. Don't think throwing money at it is going to solve the problem.
Yeah, that's a good tip to pass on.
Yeah.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, because we obviously played the YouTube video, the sound from the YouTube thing, social media, I think, mm-hmm. is probably the way to go. And you've produced some nice little videos on your YouTube. If anyone, if I say just search for SoundWand mm-hmm. on YouTube, you're going to find some videos out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can get them on soundwandapp.com too. I'll just do that little plug. Social media, I have a couple things I will say from my experience. And I just qualify slightly that, you know, I'm like in my position here. Some people are doing really well with things that maybe it'll sound like I'm quite disparaging about. So take that all in context. But if you're just starting out, you are in my position. So, you know, maybe it's helpful. Facebook is more and more about getting you to pay than it ever used to be. And that is really their business model, especially now that they're, you know, they've gone their whole floating route. You know, it used to be you could get people to like you. So a concrete example. On Twitter, and I started the Twitter page, I followed lots and lots of people, as everyone starts to do, and I had quite a few follow backs, and not as many as I followed, but you know, it got at least a little bit of a list going. Facebook, I invited my friends and got, you know, I think 10 of them or something to join, and I went on to a bunch of groups, and you know, relevant groups like music production people and apps people, and said, hey, check out this new app, it's one of a kind, all this stuff. Absolutely nothing, not a single like from anywhere. And I don't think it's because I came across wrong necessarily, all the time at least. I think it's because Facebook really is not interested in you getting free likes. And unless you've got a thriving website already, that's, you know, that which will feed your social media page, don't think you can go from scratch on social media and build a business, especially now. Because now you have to, you pay for likes, and then you have to pay to get your post to go out to all those likes, because it's called promote your post, or whatever Facebook calls it. So, you know, as I was saying earlier, and so, you know, it's really quite challenging, actually. And they want you to use those ads because that's how they make their money.
Yeah.
Twitter, similar, there's an analogous situation, but different. So Twitter, everyone's really active, and Twitter is actually a great way of contacting people who otherwise you couldn't get their email or who wouldn't reply to their email. Carl, you're a good example. Carl, he'll tweet you in a moment, but getting his email, tough. Twitter is really, all Twitter followers are definitely not the same. I had a guy early on retweet SoundWan tweet with a link to, I think, the App Store, with 365,000 followers, and it was like one of those bit.ly links, so I could track it, and it had 4 click-throughs, which is like a 0.00001% conversion rate, which is terrible, right? I had one woman who I gave a promo code to, just as a sort of promotional thing, who had like 10 followers, and I thought, yeah, I ran this little sort of contest, retweet, get a promo code, right? And she did, and she had like 10 followers, and I thought, oh, great, you know, that's fantastic. And actually, then she was so excited by the thing, she went and told all her friends. She put a post on this this kind of gaming forum, apps gaming forum, and she did a really great little bit of marketing. So a really important lesson there, that actually it's not necessarily about the quantity. And the other thing that really makes this tricky is a new website called Fiverr, which is spelled Fiverr.com. Which is an American thing, but it, you know, as web is, it's global. And you spend $5. People offer things for $5, and everything is $5. And it can be anything from like sing a little song and record it to, I don't know, do your homework for $5. There's everything you could imagine is on there. But there's a whole bunch of people doing social media stuff. So you can buy 1,000 Facebook likes, or even I think it's 2,000 Facebook likes for $5. How did they manage to do it without Facebook catching on? I do not know. Right? Oh, are these real followers? No, they are not. Do they make you look a little bit better by boosting your numbers? Maybe, but is it really worth it? I'm not so sure. That's your call, but I'm just letting you know what's out there. So Twitter is even worse. You can buy hundreds of thousands of retweets for $5, and a lot of them kind of allude to that their lists are legit, or that they have a highly responsive list. Well, I had one like that I started to use, and I wanted to use a bit.ly link to track it, and he had, sorry, we don't do bit.ly links. And I thought, why? I thought maybe it was like a new Twitter policy, not liking, you know, because they try to convert them out. And he said, no, that's just how it is, and if you don't like it, then tough. And he canceled the order straight away. And I thought, mm-hmm. Okay, right, that's because that's why. And I did a few of those, and again, same kind of click-through rates. There was one or two that were okay that might have made me break even on my $5, but not really worth the time. Maybe it's like, again, part of another campaign where you've got a lot of content rolling out just to give you a little extra boost. But, you know, I heard some people raving about Fiverr. I think it's not really worth the time. The best thing for marketing, really, I've found, is just emailing journalists, getting a really good press release together, and figuring out what makes your thing legitimately unique. And not with, you know, lots of marketing BS, but, you know, just in plain English, like a proper press release, learn how to do it. There's lots of guides online, and just emailing as many journalists as you can. I've built a press list of about 500 highly targeted app and tech and music journalists just by going on websites, finding their name, using a little bit of clever, ingenuity, and you can get an email. And I tried the kind of, oh, hi, how are you? Let's be friends. And actually, in the end, I just send out press releases raw. And most of them prefer that, I think. And the other thing, you go to a website, there might be like 30 journalists. And you think, oh, should I email the editor or the tech writer? Email them all. And one might get back to you. That's my experience. And nobody knows. Nobody checks each other's inbox. So they don't know that you emailed the other guy unless they talk. And then they probably don't care. But that is the best marketing I've had has been just direct contact, old school email, or maybe LinkedIn if you're really into that, or Twitter is good. But Twitter's hard to like automate, and it's hard to keep track of who you've done and who you haven't. You know, go get yourself a MailChimp account, and it makes it really quite a good usable way of running a press campaign.
Lots of fantastic tips there. And just to clarify, no money has changed hands for you to come on this show, has it?
No, not at all.
I just enjoy giving you developers a voice sort of thing, because I think you deserve it, because you work so hard on these apps. And, they appear in the App Store, and if they don't get in that top 10 or top 50, then they sort of get lost. And I just want to bring, the chance to give you guys a voice to show how these things came to be.
Yeah.
Because there's always a story behind every application. There's a story. Mm.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I really feel compelled. One of the reasons I wanted to do this show is just to share just the stuff I've learned. And like I said, I haven't really cracked it yet. So, you might think, what's he know? Because he's no expert. But actually, sometimes the person who's in the middle of it, who hasn't solved the problem, has a lot more to offer. I just plugged my website briefly, club15cc.com. I've just revamped, partly to share all the stuff that I've learned. So there's a code section, for a lot of the programming stuff and tools and stuff. And, I'll be writing more up about these kind of tips as I go through them, probably just to create conversation, get people on there who might say, you're horribly wrong. And then in the process, I'll learn what I can do that's better. But also, it's a big, beautiful world out there in terms of apps. And it seems so great to be able to get onto that ladder. And it is. And it's really cool to have an app. And I'm so proud of it. And so, pleased every time I sort of see the work that I put into it. I want it to work also as a business. And I want other people who have that same feeling to be able to also have the pride in that it worked as a business. So I think the more we share, the better. And I'll be doing that on that website.
Mm-hmm. And what will be the address of that?
Club15cc.com. Club, club15cc.com.
There you go. All you guys struggling out there, just go along and learn some tips.
Yes.
So you say you've had some feedback. How's the feedback been? I mean, it must be good to hear back from people that enjoyed your app.
Yeah, it's great. As long as they have, it's good either way. You either get harsh advice, which is really quite helpful once you've gotten over it. I went to a kind of app meetup thing in London back when I was right near, about a month or two away from finishing the app. And I met an app developer who has a great app called Jampipe. I just plug because he's a cool guy. That lets you sort of make collaborative music. Again, no affiliation, but a cool guy, deserves a plug. And he sort of picked it up and did a little thing with it. And then he sort of delineated like, five things that were wrong with it or that, needed to be done. And it was really quite a shock. But I knew just when I saw him kind of go into that like critical mode, I knew what he was about to say was worth listening to. And it was really helpful advice. So go out to these kind of things. App developers are the worst in terms of the harsh advice because techies in general, especially if you have a music app, they kind of look at it and they think, what's this? And they come up with a thing straight away. But totally worthwhile. Get over their personality, get over your feelings, because you'll learn really good stuff about ways to improve your app for everybody. That's really useful. I've had some good feedback on the App Store and good quotes from people, and that's really quite reassuring. And it helps both, getting ratings helps you sell them. And it just helps your confidence. So that's a really great thing.
Good. So what are the plans for the future of Sound One? Any updates coming
down
the road?
I'm working on recording now to have like a little two-track recorder in there so you can record yourself playing maybe like a background rhythm, and then you can jam over top of it and record that, and hopefully get that, get the ability to share that as well on maybe SoundCloud or Facebook, or maybe Spotify, who knows. I think that's something that'd be really good to have. I'm working on some new instruments, just preliminary stage of that, that will probably go in that app, maybe in-app purchases, I'm not sure. I've got all kinds of instruments in my head. I want to do a MIDI version, which is the ability, it doesn't have any sound in it, it just communicates out to the computer, so you can link it up to a synthesizer, you can link it up to a drum kit, you could do all kinds of crazy things with it. I've got a prototype for an acoustic guitar version that you'll strum by actually strumming the phone, or not strumming the phone, using the phone to strum the air, almost like you were strumming a guitar in front of you, which works quite well. I just did a kind of a very quick prototype. And it's pretty cool, and it feels like a guitar. And there's a lot of these guitar apps out there. This one will give you a little bit more of that kind of dynamic feel of a guitar, I think. So that's coming down the line. And I've got a handful of these. Really, it's just to keep using the motion sensors and just create more ways of making like music that connects to your, I guess, your energy. You know, if you play it really energetically, you get energetic music, and you know, but in a totally like original creative way. So it's not like you've got built-in songs and you manipulate those songs. That's other people are doing that, and that's great. But you can actually, you know, use these as real instruments.
And I know you're probably under an NDA, but is there anything you've seen in the new iOS 6 coming along that's got you interested?
Gosh, I've really kind of kept out of the loop a bit. I just casually just ever so lightly keep an eye on things to make sure. I did a little look to see, and my biggest interest is the motion sensors, and the sort of sharing APIs are quite useful too, but nothing that really changes it for me, which I'm quite grateful for, because that's like, so a surprise, you've got a whole new can of worms to sort of sort out and to incorporate if you want to stay in the game. So I was quite happy that there wasn't too much, but I'm hoping that they'll keep making sophisticated sensors and improving the accuracy and the speed of them, so we can actually, you know, turn the iPhone into a real tool for, you know, people use on stage. And I mean, it's like I see it like the MP3 player. The MP3 players were around long before the iPod, as we, you know, a lot of us know. I had a little tiny one, but they didn't really, the whole thing didn't explode digital music until the iPod came on the scene, because suddenly everybody had an iPod. And there's been like funky motion controllers, there's been like laser harps, and there's been, you know, things like that around for donkey's years, and, you know, wind controllers, but actually nobody has them, and they're expensive and they're hard to find. Now everyone has an iPhone. Now suddenly there's the platform to be able to change the entire landscape of the way music is created.
Well, Harry, I hope you get great success from Sound One. It's really a fun app to play with. So how much is it in the App Store at the moment?
Right now it is £1.99. And one quick little piece of it. Everyone sort of wonders about the price. I ran a little experiment where I dropped it down to 69p. for a week, and you get like an initial spike because there's all these websites that track you and see when you do the price drops, but after that it was down to the same very few sales per day that it was otherwise. So I read a good piece of advice from the guys who do the Discover series of apps, and he said always keep experimenting with the price. It's not like you know, traditional products where if you run sales all the time, people never buy from you unless it's in a sale. It's a different environment, so experiment with the price.
Well, I hope the listeners to this feel inclined to go and check it out, because it really is good fun.
Cool. I'll plug my website one more time, just because I've compiled a list of some of the tools I've used over the way that might save you a little bit of time of finding them yourself. So a lot of design templates that have the iPhone framework and Illustrator and Photoshop and for drawing wireframes and stuff. And to get that, it's quite a large download. So if you want that, go to the code section of club15cc.com and sign up to the mailing list, and I'll have the link to that when you get the reply.
Excellent stuff.
Cool. Thanks, Carl.
This show and every other show on the network is brought to you by UK2.net. They really do keep us on the air, and we'd love if you could show your appreciation for us by giving them some business. If you just go to BritishTechNetwork.com and scroll down and find their click-through link, you can buy any services there to get you online and set up your domains and various DNS things. Anything you buy from them, you can use these voucher codes and you'll get some discounts. All of them include British Tech, and then you simply add DNS, it will get you free DNS for up to 2 years. Domains will get you 20% off domain registration, VPN will give you 50% off your first month of VPN. Server will give you £50 off any gigabit server on any contract length. And VPS will get your first month free when purchasing an entry-level VPS system. Like I say, they've been supporting us for over 3 years now. They're a wonderful company, and they keep British Tech ticking over. So, Harry, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Cora.
Where can people get hold of you?
The best place is on the website, club15cc.com, and my contact details will be somewhere on there, down at the bottom probably.
I do really wish you all the best with your app. It is fantastic fun, and I have enjoyed playing with it.
Thank you.
My name's Carl Madden. You get me on Twitter at Clause0101. That's all for now. See you next time. Stay safe.
Bye-bye.
Bye.